Afternoon, everybody. Well, almost afternoon. Thanks for coming along. I'd like to introduce ourselves. So my name's Peter Haig. I'm a tech strategist working for Microsoft in Wellington. Mostly what I do is talk about stuff, buy coffee, and just help our customers figure out where to go next with their strategy and how to get value out of their current investments. This is my colleague, Carl DeBorst. Carl is also a tech strategist. We do the same sort of thing, just slightly different sets of customers. So I guess the reason we're here today is there's lots of people who have just been doing high complexity, high cost, multi-million dollar projects that take a long time to get off good old Windows XP. So most of you, I'm hoping, have shifted to Windows 7, which is why this session should be relevant. And I guess the question for us all is Windows 7 the new XP, that you can basically chuck it in place and then set it and forget it for the next 5 years? Is that a good strategy? Is it a relevant strategy? Certainly a possible strategy, but is it the best way forward for you and your business users? So a quick show of hands, just would like to get an idea of the makeup of the audience. So who's actually finished their Windows 7 rollout? Dudes, I'm loving that. That's awesome. Right, who's partway through a rollout? That's good stuff. Cool. And who hasn't started yet?
Ooh.
Cool. Everyone likes doing these projects in a rush, I'm sure. No pressure at all. Nothing will go wrong. I just want to call out that we have got a session after lunch with Terry down here and myself, which is around that particular side of things. If you're not going off XP quite yet, then come and talk to us then. Cool. So today, you should have probably done the projects. Typically, the benchmarks I've been giving out to people are, it's about $1,000 in direct costs for transition per device. It's typically going to require 12 months of preparatory effort before you actually start pushing devices out. And if you're doing a big, fast project, typically it's going to be around about 1,000 devices per month. Very complex, it'll touch every single user in your business, and boy, things can go wrong. But hopefully, most of you are done, you're relaxing. Life is good, you're watching cat videos, which you couldn't do during your project. And some of the outcomes you should have achieved through this project, on the whole, your users should be happier, depending on how the project went, but for most organisations, people have been using much newer stuff at home. So actually, getting them up to 7, which is catching them up to several years back of technology, is really catching up the workplace to home. So that should be a relief for them. You will have enhanced security, which we'll cover off a bit later as well. Fundamentally, Windows 7 is a much more secure operating system than XP certainly is today, and certainly will be next year. You've got support for years. And if you've done things right, you've modernized your tools, the way that you do things and your processes, you really should have driven your TCO down. So the question really is, can you stop there? Well, of course you can, but should you stop there? Is that really enough, what you've done to date? When you look at what the demands are from your business units, how you're interacting with customers, the makeup of your workforce, is it okay just to stop there at 7 and a modernization? When you look at the typical demands, we've got, we all know the 4 mega trends and things. The big relevant one here is mobility. BYOD, more people being fundamentally mobile in how they work, working from home. You have workforces who are perhaps contact center agents working from home. You've got a changing landscape. You've also got a lot of appetite from your end users around, hey, I want a tablet device, or I don't want something with a keyboard attached. I want to be able to do this. Take it apart. Different types of devices. So the first thing we're going to look at really is the why. Why would you not just stay and settle on Windows 7? Another way of framing that for you guys is, why the heck would I possibly want to do another freaking desktop project? That one was hard enough and it cost us bucket loads. So we've had a little bit of feedback around Windows 8. Which is why we've got Windows 8.1, right? Jarring. We love jarring. We want you to all talk to us about jarring stuff. Bang, 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 bang. And we get some of that. But anyway, you know, when you look at Windows 8.1, and if you're in a deployment planning phase at the moment and figuring out your strategy, you're probably not going to be looking at doing Windows 8. It's going to be Windows 8.1. And the first thing is, you know, that whole user experience, the whole user acceptance, how's that going to go? So in terms of jarring, here's a freaking jarring experience for you, but it's the only one you're going to get, because 8.1 really does deal to that switching back and forth with the start screen in a nice way. In terms of the decision between 8 and 8.1, really our view is that in every way, 8.1 is the superior operating system, and that's what you should be targeting. The only real good reason I've seen for perhaps looking at doing an 8 rollout at scale is if you're operating in a secure agency, perhaps in central government, and you've got a requirement for FIPS or Common Criteria Security Approvals. We've just about to have Windows 8 and Server 2012. Just skip through the approvals there, and we're about to start on doing 8.1 and 2012 R2. So really, my view is this shouldn't be a decision. You should be going straight to 8.1. Right. So in terms of looking at the actual reasons why you'd say, hey, look, you know, we've just done 7. We're not going to spend megabucks and change the whole lot. We've just done that. There's too much user impact. Now, what are the specific use cases, the specific scenarios, the things that you think might actually add value? So we're just saying, you know, there's a bunch of scenarios outside your big fleet of standard desktops that are going to make a difference. So these are the ones we're going to talk about today. You know, looking at business tablets, you know, that's a challenge and an opportunity for every organization today. You know, what gives with Windows 8 and 8.1 business tablets? Having just a quick skip through the whole thing of, you know, if you put it onto all PCs, what's the impact there? Well, that's not the general focus of this session, but what's the relevance? Looking at the whole world of apps, which goes really hand in hand with tablets. Looking at the security side of things, what's the difference there? And also looking at Windows to Go, which is probably one of the most overlooked but most exciting technologies we have with 8 and 8.1. And next, just saying, from a general mobility side of things, how do these new operating systems just help mobility be a better experience on a, you know, massive chunky thing like this or a tablet? What difference does it make? And we're going to spend a little bit of time, particular focus around hybrid tablets, which are a big thing for us at Microsoft. We think this is a really, really relevant form factor that most organizations should be looking at. So, best business tablets. So I'm not going to run through all these things. You've probably seen most of this stuff covered. But, you know, Windows 8 basically takes all the goodness which you've had in Windows 7 and that classic operating system, adds a whole lot of stuff to basically support all the new form factors and funky stuff like a Surface Pro. Really makes a lot of sense. I think, you know, one of the big key things is, you know, just the sheer variety. With our ecosystem, you know, the great work we've got with Panasonic around ruggedized devices, motion computing ruggedized devices, Dell, HP, Samsung. There's just an amazing array of different devices. You know, we've even got, you know, funky big tablets like this, which might be good for retail type environments, you know, that run for 7 hours a day with new Haswell chips. Quite funky stuff. Windows 8.1, there's some relevance here as well. Basically, the big thing is around supporting all the new different hardware which is coming through. Now, Intel's got some fantastic new chipsets, taking advantage of that. You know, if you want a tablet which is maybe a bit smaller than this, 8-inch form factors, really optimized for that as well. Makes sense. But from a general strategy perspective, when you look at, you know, managing PCs, securing PCs, you know, auditing across PCs, all that sort of stuff, you guys know how to do this. You know, it's an area of safety for you. And the whole thing with, I've worked with lots and lots of organizations who are introducing tablets. And they're going, we've got this MDM solution that costs us $100 per month for each tablet device or smartphone to actually put some security around it. Every time the mobile operating system updates, we've got these new scenarios when you try and figure out and deal with. What's the fundamental operating system security, the app environment security? It's really damn complex, it really is. So for us, you know, we're saying Windows is pretty good at this stuff, it really is. And it has all this fantastic productivity stuff. You know, the goodness with SharePoint, with Link, Office. And then saying, well, okay, how does this translate into business tablets? Well, funnily enough, all that security stuff, the access control, it's all the same. And so is the productivity. Pretty easy. So you can basically take all your investment in managing and securing your PCs to operate a safe and productive environment, and you can leverage that across into tablets. So, you know, it's tablet PC, tablet PC, tablet PC, it's the same thing. So next, you know, if you were going to look at rolling out one of these new operating systems across all of your PCs, you know, what's the net kind of impact on that? Traditional desktops, etc. With Windows 8, if you've tried it out, you'll know it just boots a heck of a lot faster. And one thing to think about, if you've got a bunch of PCs, and there's quite a lot of organizations who are in this position, if you've got a lot of kind of crusty PCs, and you're thinking, what do I do with these? Do I make them thin clients? Do I upgrade them to 7? They're going to be a bit sort of crap on that. You know, what are you going to do? Or do you replace them all with brand new machines? The fact of the matter is that Windows 8 is a leaner operating system. You can actually look at, you know, if you put 8 on this, or 8.1, as it should be, onto these devices, you can actually effectively extend the life of these devices. And in terms of these, you know, general traditional form factors, if you like, 8.1, the ability to boot to the desktop, you've got a, you know, start tip slash start button back there. It just makes a lot more sense. It's going to be a much more natural fit onto those traditional devices. Another use case, and this is probably, you know, certainly quite an edge case, is the whole thing around Windows 8.1 embedded industry version. So this is basically saying if you've got kiosk devices, for example, kiosks are very topical these days, and you need to secure those devices in a serious way. Now, this is arguably the best operating system for doing this. Excuse me, let's grab a drink. You can lock it down and restrict, you know, which things can happen on those sorts of machines and put them into effectively a type of steady state. And for the first time, you're able to get Windows embedded through volume licensing, which is quite a significant change. So, this is an interesting trend that we're seeing, is that in the past, you know, most organizations, you'd get dished out a single device. Maybe if you're important, you get a smartphone or a basic phone, you have a feature phone. But what we've seen is, you know, more organizations are doling out a smartphone, a tablet, and you can get this kind of scenario happening. So we take someone called Carl, happy guy.
Yep.
Hair's changed a little bit. IT, this is not you guys, of course, but other people. You give them a you know, clunky old massive machine like this, possibly running Windows XP. This is what's been going on. You know, it's chunky, ugly, it's not cool. You don't want to be seen at the Koru Club with this, for heaven's sake.
I'm not going anywhere. I'm staying in the cupboard.
Yeah. So next thing, you go and buy a phone. And, yeah, it does a bit of email. Next thing. Those tablets look really cool. I want one of those, right? I can do my email. I can just grab and go and do a little bit of productivity stuff. But those tablets don't run business applications. So you get it, and it does some stuff. It is useful, but it's fairly expensive, has management costs, but quite limited in terms of functionality. So now this is the next step that usually happens. It's like, well, we like the tablet. We love the form factor. It's a beautiful device. How do we get all the business applications and services? Excuse me. Dying a little bit. All right, so how do we get all the business stuff down onto the tablet? So what you're seeing happening is people are actually spinning up big VDI farms or a, you know, remote desktop session farm. And what you've ended up with is, you know, they've still got a PC, which is an asset that you're having to manage. You've got a phone, which is, you know, possibly BYOD, which has got some management and security aspects to it. You've got a tablet, which is like a phone, only bigger. And then you've got a VDI implementation. And that's a lot of stuff for a single user. And can it work well? Absolutely it can work well. It's pretty cool. And these are certainly trends, you know, smartphones, tablets, and virtualization of PC environments. So how many people, I guess, in the audience are going down this kind of track as a show of hands? Yeah, that's certainly what I'm seeing. So what we're calling out is you're going down this track, and it's certainly an evolution as you need to sort of restore functionality back onto these mobile devices which weren't designed to do it in the first place. So let's have a look at a different way of tackling it. Right. There's a happy guy called Pete. I'm assuming some of you have probably come along today to see what a guy looks like with a grass afro. Well, that's me. Pete gets a much cooler device than Carl. I get a hybrid tablet. Check it out.
Not good. Not happy.
Yeah. I can click. I'm cool. I get a better phone that can do more stuff on it. It's got Office on it, access to SharePoint, it's got Link, etc. Much more functional device. And then I get enabled to do stuff from home, you know, secure access to work documents, secure access to email, and published applications. It's a much, much better experience. And that's three devices. Well, it's two devices plus some remote access. So when you're thinking about your device strategy, we're just saying, you know, have a think about device consolidation. And you know, why would you actually want to consolidate devices? Because it's cool having a smartphone, it's cool having a tablet, and the sort of virtualized get your PC anywhere. The thing is, you know, really, where is TCO in these evolving, agile, dynamic desktop strategy discussions? And certainly I don't hear TCO come up a lot until people are well down the track and they start pulling stuff together and going, holy crap, my device fleet is huge, or it's going to be huge if I do this next order that's in front of me. So it's a quick show of hands. Who's actually having like really meaningful, big picture TCO conversations and evolving their strategy? Yeah. That's what I'm seeing, or not seeing, more to the point. So you know, the thing is that all devices cost money to support. They cost money to manage. And the trend is towards more devices, not few. And this is cool for users. We like toys. Toys are good. You know, the question is, which organizations have got too much money these days? Who doesn't have budget pressure? I'd say that's probably stuff all. So that's why we'd be saying, have a careful think about your device strategy and what you're doing, and understand if you know you can go bang, 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 and end up somewhere where your TCO is monstrous. So you better have done a damn good business case. So just looking at TCO very briefly, you know, there's a couple of scenarios. If you think that, you know, if you've got a PC and it's still going to be managed, and these TCO figures are some sort of averaged ones, and they include both direct and indirect costs, so you know, the impact upon actual productivity for your people. So you've got a PC, it could be 3K, a tablet, if it's managed heavily, could be 3K. A virtualized desktop environment's typically about the same. I've shaved some off because there's commonality between managing a PC and a VDI, and a smartphone could be a couple of K. You know, it's quite conceivable to end up with a total TCO for one person of about 10K. When you look at the impact on the number of things they have to sort stuff out on, number of things you have to manage, support, secure, troubleshoot, all that sort of stuff. Where if you actually were able to have basically, say, just a hybrid tablet and a smartphone, you're looking at around about half that. And that's got to have some appeal. And a good example of this kind of process is recently I was working with a large government agency, roughly about sort of 9,000 devices or so, a few smartphones. And they're looking at it going, you know, full hog into a mobility strategy. And it makes absolute buckets of sense for, you know, actually driving change in the business, improving workflows, et cetera. It's something really that just actually has to happen for the effectiveness of the whole business. And they were going to look at basically, you know, keeping a PC fleet and having, you know, loads of smartphones and tablets, and then rolling out additional tablets, et cetera, across the PC fleet users as well. And what actually happened is they're going down this track, and then they got to this point where they actually spreadsheeted it up and said, well, look, okay, we've got 9,000, maybe direct costs of about 1,000 a shot. It's 9 million in TCO. That's a good bit of change. And then they actually looked at, right, so if we're going to more than double that by adding smartphones and tablets, and there may be another bunch, that's 20,000 devices maybe with $1,000 per device in terms of operating costs, that's $20 million, right? It's like, whoa, got an extra $11 million in my pockets. Maybe, maybe not. It's not to say it's the wrong thing to do, but it just means that, you know, that business case of IT absorbing these costs around managing all these devices, you better be aware of where it's going, and you better be actually securing that budget from your business users who are going to then reap the benefits of all this mobility. And the other thing that came out of it was saying, actually, for the PCs, let's maybe not look at just staying with regular PCs anymore. Let's look at changing those and actually having hybrid tablets. And then we can replace those one device with one device and actually really, you know, maybe save $4 million a year in TCO. That's worth thinking about. And just from a, you know, a functionality perspective in terms of, you know, what a user actually gets, you know, these are the form factors you have. You've got your pocketable smartphone, you kind of have to have that, right? And you make calls on it, et cetera. You got your grab and go, which is, hey, I need something I can actually do a bit of email on and surfing and stuff. That's, you know, it just fits some different use or similar use cases, but it's better at doing those. And then you have your sit down, you actually do your work on and make your documents, your spreadsheets, and fill in your reports and use your line of business apps. So if one of these has to go, you know, as a consequence of a rationalization process, you know, this is what we're sort of saying, is have a think about, you know, a hybrid tablet device paired with a smartphone. I mean, it is possible to go an extra step beyond that, and I'm not saying this is probably going to be a good idea, but, you know, the reality is with a device like this here, you know, you've got Link on there, you've got Skype on there, you've got a Bluetooth headset, battery life of a full day, et cetera. You know, you could go down to one, but, you know, it's probably going a little too far, I'd say. So we think, you know, that hybrid tablets really make a lot of sense when you're actually planning out a strategy. Highly functional, they do everything and they do it well. Cost, and when we talk through the TCO, you can basically, instead of getting a tablet and a laptop or a PC, single device, halve the TCO, worth looking at. Security, we've covered that as well. You can secure these devices extremely well because they're a PC. And the other stuff applies there. So enough from me for a moment. So over to Carl to look at the side, the app side of things.
Yeah, so Peter's talking a lot about that mobility strategy and that TCO that really comes into that. But really what I'm thinking about is also why you're looking at your TCO strategy and your mobility strategy. Also look at your application strategy, because if you're looking at rolling out devices and tablets, whether they be hybrid phones, and looking at that, what you're enabling your workforce to have, then the application becomes really part of that, right? Because what is that experience going to be like for that end user? Now, we're seeing a lot of the time now that the applications that are being created or being replatformed or developed are really much, very much around workflows, business processes, where you've got a single focus task that you're going through a particular process, whether that be with another customer, with a citizen, with an internal business team member. You're mapping yourself through a series of data entry points, capturing other data, manipulating other things around Excel or all those sort of things around that. And really what you want to be doing is focusing that down to a particular application. So this is where the internal line of business applications sit. And where we see our business solutions, so for example, Dynamics CRM, that's really where the forefront's going to be, and the interface back through the back-end systems in the back there. When we look at some of the line of business apps that are being created out there, you've seen in the keynote earlier this week, the All Blacks application, right? Those kind of immersive experiences that can be created with Windows 8 tablets and Windows 8 applications. You see some of the enterprises out there, so for example, the Toyota Racing there, the fact that they can make better decisions based on that car driver, feeding back information and relaying areas of concern back to the pit crew, so they can obviously start working on what needs to happen once that car enters the pit. For example, Emirates. You know, in an airline, obviously customer service is key to loyalty, to the experience that they provide back, and even the feedback. So being able to have a tablet and an application on board, in this case it was the HP ElitePad 900, you know, being able to sit down next to a customer and walk through their itinerary, their agenda, what's going to happen when they land.
Yeah, and sell them upgrades on the spot.
And upsells. That type of experience is going to be fundamental in how you start enabling your workforce. and particularly in mobility scenarios.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you look at Windows 8 tablets and you say, hey, we're going to build desktop applications and stick them in the hands of our field force, you're going about it wrong. You know, it's why we have invested in the formerly known as Metro modern UI, because basically it's designed for touch and it's designed for those workflow-based scenarios. You know, if you're doing desktop stuff, it's, you know, as much as Windows 8 and 8.1 are really extremely well tuned for touch interfaces and getting, you know, accurate points of touch, it's just the wrong type of UI.
Yeah, and as much as that Windows 7, you know, the whole notion of that multitasking scenario where you have multiple windows up there and for that information worker doing their job on the desktop, you know, that's where high productivity comes into play. But really having Windows 8 as well, that just gets enhanced with multi-monitor support. And if you're having Windows 8 applications as well, that ability to still multitask amongst those other applications and integration across it means that you're obviously starting to still evolve that bit. With Windows 8.1, also include the assigned access. And this is really what we call kiosk mode now. So the ability to lock down that single application experience. So this is fantastic for kind of hotel lobby scenarios or banking customer scenarios. Or really where you want to just lock down the inability for the user to go in and sort of muck up your image and start launching other applications or other windows.
Yeah, I mean, we had a lot of feedback, you know, around steady state disappearing from XP, which was, you know, a while ago. You know, Vista and 7 haven't had a steady state type mode to actually lock down and support this type of single application environment. You had to go and find and ferret out a third-party kiosk toolset, and now it's back in the OS for modern apps.
Yep, it's natively included. And some of the scenarios that I'm working with a bunch of my customers is really around agenda-type management. So being able to go in and book a room, having these kind of room control systems. So when you're in a hotel room, all those sort of things where you can turn the lights up or order some room service and see what's on the menu for that. All those types of scenarios can be enabled through assigned access and even extended through what we call the Windows Embedded 8.1. So that's where you can obviously add in extra peripherals to extend upon those scenarios. So for example, barcode readers and scanners, those types of things.
Cool. So security. I love these graphs. They're cool. The key thing here is, I mean, you can look at the XP stuff, and that's interesting, and most of you can feel good about having got off there. But in terms of, you know, you're looking at Windows 7 versus Windows 8. You know, 7's a good OS. Lots of good security features, BitLocker if you're running the enterprise version, etc. But if you look at this, just look at the infection rates. This is what we've measured out in the wild. This is from our security intelligence report. If you care about security, absolutely recommend you get our security intelligence reports free, off the internet, check it out. You look at this, for a 32-bit OS, a Windows 7 device, on average, is 5 times as likely as a Windows 8 device to contract malware. You look at 64-bit, a 64-bit Windows 7 device is roughly 16 times as likely. Okay? 7 is good, 8 is a crap load better. Then looking at the native OS security, and this is a little bit of a funny one. This is looking at operating system versions where they're unprotected, so I've got no anti-malware, and where they've got anti-malware active. You might ask, Windows 8, didn't Microsoft put like anti-malware baked into that? How can you have no anti-malware on it? That's a pretty legit question. So the scenario there basically is that you know, you can buy a machine from retail, it's got a third-party AV solution on it, it's time bomb, 30 days protection. Not everyone actually remembers to either, you know, keep that subscription going or just turn the free stuff back on. Anyway, so looking at this, a protected Windows 7 machine, and I assume for you guys who are managing enterprise fleets, you're going to have anti-malware turned on, that a Windows 7 device is 3 times as likely to basically contract a virus compared to Windows 8. For 32-bit and 64-bit, it's 6 times as likely. So you can basically just increase the aggregate level of protection on your fleet by having Windows 8 or 8.1 devices instead of Windows 7. Another big thing, and this is a real mega trend, and you may have seen a recent product launch from another company who does smartphones. It had some cool stuff in it. And you know, biometrics is really a mega trend that you need to be thinking about. We've got machines like this one here. It's got a swipey thing on it. We all know how cool those are to use, right? Swipe, 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 swipe. So this is an area that's really evolving. There was a thing I read recently which basically said, I think there was something, it was either 6 or 10 million passwords which were analysed, and was the and 10,000 of the passwords would unlock 90% of the accounts. It was something ridiculous like this. So what we're going to see is a trend towards, you know, I don't know who's seen BitLocker recovery keys, 36 characters. I think you're going to see a trend towards massive passwords that you never want to type in, but are much, you know, fundamentally much more secure, and then using biometrics to authenticate onto your devices. So 8.1 is the first Windows operating system that's really got proper, full biometric fingerprint authentication built into it. In the past, you know, you could use, like on this one here, biometrics, but you'd be reliant upon third-party stuff for doing the enrollments and managing it through the operating system. So, you know, that's history now. The support is built in. It's enabled for system login. Now, one thing is it matches the, you know, it stores the fingerprints on this device. It doesn't go and put your fingerprints up into Active Directory, et cetera. You know, some people are quite concerned around having an Active Directory database of all of our fingerprints in our organization. But basically, it's just around the association on the device. And you know, Carl was talking about the apps before. The opportunity here is for having applications where, yes, you've authenticated onto the device, but in order to actually authorize a transaction or to fire up a particularly sensitive application, you just need to basically touch it on there. So these swipy things are going out. You're going to see these capacitive type of fingerprint sensors where you just touch it on there. It's got all the liveness detection, so if Terry chops off my finger, which I'd rather you didn't, Terry, and you know, he tries to authenticate onto my device, it's going to go, sorry, Terry, Pete's finger is dead. You can't use it. And you might go, well, who really does this? But I did hear about a scenario where there's some doctors in South America, and they thought, we like golf. Golf is good. Maybe you don't want to work all the time. And they had basically fingerprint-based, clock-in, clock-out at work. So they made some really nice latex rubber fingers, and two of them would go into work, and the third guy got to play golf. So this sort of stupid stuff happens. Yeah, so at the moment, these sort of touch-based sensors for PCs are not mainstream, they're not common yet, but they absolutely will be in the near future. Carl, Windows to go.
Yeah, so another pillar of that mobility strategy that we're talking about is actually really evaluating what Windows to go could bring to your organization. When we talk about Windows to go, it's pretty much a workspace that you can fit in your pocket. It's on a USB stick. We have a number of vendors that are actually manufacturing these USB sticks with extra encryption algorithms that you can put on top of that, which really enable you to have a loaded Windows 8 image with your personalization settings, with your applications, with your authentication methods built into your Windows 8, Windows to go stick. And these range from 32 gigabytes all the way up to 500 gigabytes. So there is something in there for everybody in that sense. And really what you're looking at is what kind of scenarios does that make available to you? And ones that really do make sense are, for example, the contractors. You know, people that you bring into organization for typically short periods of time. Do you have a device that you provide with that? Do you have to go out and buy one? Do they bring their own? How do you onboard them into your organization so they get access to resources you want to provide? You can give them a Windows to Go stick, which essentially enables them to plug that in, get access to resources no matter what device they're on. You could provide a small little area where you have essentially shared PCs for contractors. That obviously will drop down those number of devices you're having to manage for that scenario. Traveling light, being able to go and plug this into it, knowing that you've got a PC either at home or the end destination point, you can put this into your travel bag. You don't have to carry around or lug around that big XP laptop that you've been carrying around previously. You're going from this to that. A big difference there. And then the main thing with Windows to go is that in 8.1 we've enabled the store by default now. So the fact that those applications that you've got on there now have access to be updated and patched in the way they should be. So you're always getting that full experience that you're familiar with having. Just like to also point out that Windows to go, the fact that many of you have now relicensed yourselves with SA and Software Assurance for enterprise versions of Windows 7 to get you to that point, if you maintain that, you obviously have access also to Windows to Go. That's a part of the software assurance rights under volume licensing.
Yeah, so there's no additional licensing required for whatever devices or however many there are that you end up running the Windows to Go in.
So sort of play this out on the screen here. The fact that at the moment you've got your primary device that you've got in your corporate workplace, you're connected through that, and you have some of the things that tick away in the background. So your folder redirection, you might have virtualized applications being pushed down via ATV in this case, and then also your user experience virtualization, which has been enabled in Windows 8. But you're booting from your internal hard drive in that sense.
Yeah, I just want to call out around UEV. UEV is a very new product for us. It's in the MDOP suite. And you might have seen Windows 8 and 8.1, you know, your settings roam across all your devices, and that's very, very cool. But if you want the same thing, it's all done around your Live ID, your Microsoft ID. Obviously, for enterprise scenarios where you're jumping around maybe different devices or a remote desktop session, a VDI session, it'd be nice to have the same thing. And UEV basically provides a lot of that same roaming facility across applications, Internet Explorer, et cetera, inside a corporate environment.
Yeah, so essentially, you do have all your files roaming, you do have your applications roaming, and then the settings that your personal preferences on those applications with you as well. In this case, you've got your USB stick up in the top there, you plug that into your corporate machine, and you're provisioning your USB to go, Windows to go workplace. It gets provisioned to your account, and then as you then exit the firewall, you're booting from that external USB device now. It's got enabled through BitLocker or essentially any other vendor encryption algorithms you want to add on top of that, so you've got that security in there, and you still have access to your corporate network. Things like direct access come into play in that sense. So you've got your folder redirection, your settings, your applications, but then also you're tied into a VPN scenario.
Cool. So, I mean, these are what we sort of see as being the key benefits around Windows to Go. First one there is the fact is that a Windows to Go stick, it's not a regular flash drive. This is using an SSD. So right, this goes like the clappers. You know, they tend to be 32, 64, 128 gig devices. And when I was over at our internal version of TechEd a little while ago, I caught up with some guys going through a case study where a very, very large insurance organization with, you know, independent contract agents out there, we're looking at how can we actually improve their productivity? How can we support them in doing more business with us? So these guys, and what they did basically was they got the oldest, stinkiest machine that was being used by their agents and said, right, what can we do with this? They ended up basically going down the path of Windows to Go, and those machines, the old ones, by the time they booted up into XP, you know, logged on, got through their application, this was taking 6 minutes to do this. Basically, with Windows 8, same application, Windows to Go, 1 minute 30. That's pretty good. Actually, the other one I'll call out, excuse me, is actually ran into a telecommunications architect at from one of the major banks recently, and was saying they're basically just about to change the way their contact center operates. So basically, they've got a whole lot of agents who work from home. And what they're looking to do is publish out a desktop, a set of contact center applications, and some telephony as well, out through a VDI project. And the VDI project, you know, roughly in the order of, it was several million dollars. And I said, have you thought about Windows to Go? You could basically, for, you know, $150 or thereabouts, give them the Windows 8 image. That's going to have all the applications loaded on it. It's going to boot extremely fast. It's going to use whatever, you know, local compute power is in that person's home machine, which they probably already have. Otherwise, help them with a cheap deal on a machine. And you're going to get a brilliant experience. And if you think about the complexity difference between running and building a massive VDI implementation versus, you know, a stick, that's pretty attractive and pretty cheap. It also, you know, means that for things like unified communications, where you're maybe using headsets, that sort of stuff, rich media services, then that's just going to work better as well compared to operating that down a VDI, down a pipe with different network conditions. And the big thing is, you know, a lot of the machines that Windows to Go are likely to go into are probably not touch-enabled devices. So if you're going to do this, clearly Windows 8.1 is just a better fit.
Cool. So touching on some of the mobility features within Windows 8 and 8.1, when you think about what Windows 8 provides, we've already just been talking about the fact that, hey, look, you can extend the life of your devices and your hardware procurement there, but then also that your boot performance times are going to increase dramatically. So you're going to get a great experience from that point of view. Obviously, we've also improved the way in which you can monitor and check out your performance based off your 3G connectivity and your Wi-Fi stacking together with that.
Yeah, and that's really something I used to get inquiries about is, hey, we're going to have a field force of maybe Windows-based devices, and sometimes they're going to be on Wi-Fi, sometimes they're going to be on 3G. We'd like to use maybe the more affordable network for data kind of automatically. Can we do that? And the answer was, yeah, nah. And you'd have to go and find a third-party VPN solution. If you could find one certified for a modern operating system, that would actually do that, and that was typically going to cost you a few bob. With the connectivity management built in here, it knows which network is more expensive and basically will put you onto the less expensive network when it should.
Great. Going to the Windows 8.1, the smaller 8-inch devices that are coming out, so the Acer, the Toshiba, those ones are going to enable the fact that those applications you're starting up on that are going to fit to that screen size. And even in portrait mode, where a lot of that time you might be doing consumption work, but then also starting to launch other applications on top of that, then that's just going to enable that nice view for the end user in that case, based off that portability that you're looking for. We also have Open Device Management API in there. So at the moment, the fact that you can now use things like AirWatch to start managing your Windows 8 mobile device fleets, you can obviously use 8.1 with that, and then that's capabilities enabled.
Yeah, quick show of hands, who's actually using something like MobileIron or AirWatch or Intune at the moment in their environment? Cool. Yeah, we sort of see, the MDM type solutions sort of fit nicely between, Exchange ActiveSync, which does a lot of good stuff and the price is good, and between, management as a PC. So this is an interesting scenario. If you're not sure about sort of pulling, Windows 8.1 devices into your core desktop environment, updating your tools and things, but you'd like to try out some of these devices and see how they fit in that field environment, then you can just get these devices, don't put them into your PC management side of things, and actually just manage them through these MDM solutions. Different way of tackling it. You can always change down the track your management strategy, but you have that option.
And the last thing, I guess, is Miracast. So this presents a really nice opportunity here to start using your tablets, which you're obviously carrying around for you in one hand, most likely, and you're doing things like presentations, you're showing diagrams, you might be having your pen out and drawing something on that screen to show some of the things you want to start presenting to your users or your team. And you could use Miracast to have full HD projection with video and audio directly to a Miracast-enabled device that you can plug in and extend to, or you might be finding that TVs now are starting to have native integration with Miracast support. So since you are projecting your screen wirelessly to a larger screen or a projector in that case. Fantastic for presentations and executives when they're actually obviously doing their presentations and presenting back to the team.
Great for boardrooms.
But I guess regardless of your Windows 8 plans, if you're looking to, the killer app for this is Direct Access. Having people able to have access to corporate resources with a network tunnel that is actually really good experience from the fact that when you are connecting, is essentially really seamless. And the real key enabler in this is Server 2012. Go to Server 2012. The deployment mechanism for Direct Access is vastly improved from that, and it's going to make it easier for you in your projects and that.
Yeah. I mean, I was pretty blown away. It used to be Direct Access was high complexity. Need a bunch of dudes with lab coats to actually get it implemented, so kind of no one did. But I was, surfing through TechNet, and I found, I think it was Windows Server 2012 Essentials and the Direct Access Wizard. So, I mean, it's probably not quite as simple as that, but that sort of gives you an idea of how far it's moved along in terms of the simplicity of deployment for Direct Access. Excuse me. So just a bit of a recap. This is the scenarios we think that matter and why you'd actually look at doing it. Enough said. Which one's yours, dude?
Yeah.
Cheers. Right, so some reasons to do it. Now, if you are going to do it, how much work would I have to do this? all Pete's good ideas. Right. I mean, the reality is, you know, you've done the hard yards, most of you, you've done the hard yards and you've got off XP to 7. And that's a big generational change. And you would have known that probably the biggest, most difficult piece of that wasn't really the operating system, wasn't really the deployment tools, it was the flipping applications. You know, all the applications that have been written for XP, no UAC, et cetera, or doing stuff sort of under the covers that shouldn't really have been done. So it's really the complexity was around applications. But you know, if you've moved off XP to 7, you've done the hard yards. So these are the key areas that we think you need to look at. So let's just step through some of these. So hardware and applications, really, look, you know, if it works on 7, it's got to work on 8. There's a few areas, things that involve drivers, so things like, you know, anti-malware solutions, could be VPN solutions, that sort of stuff. They probably aren't. But you need to check on those and probably just have to go to the latest rev. Web-based things, and every time there is a change in IE, you know, we do keep on ramping up the compatibility modes, but to an extent, if websites don't say, hey, I need this version or whatever, then IE won't necessarily slip into the appropriate compatibility mode. So this is an area that, you know, you would need to check out, is test your critical internal sites, internal applications, external sites, external applications with this. You know, that's not going to take a lot of effort, but you really should make sure that you do that. So looking at management tools, I mean, this is just a quick summary of the revs that you need to have for the key management tools you need to look at. So if Windows 8, you know, the big thing probably there is you don't have to change your SCCM implementation. So if you're using Config Manager today, you just rolled out 2007 R2 or R3 maybe, you know, 9 months ago, and you're going, oh, not again. You know, SCCM 2012 does have buckets and buckets of advantages with it. So we'd say, yeah, do check it out, but don't feel you need to do it for this. You can basically use MDT to help with the builds. That's the main thing that the old 2007 SCCM can't do, is the actual OS deployment. You know, it can manage, it can distribute apps, et cetera, but not do the OS builds. Thing with 8.1, you don't really have a choice. You do need to get up to date completely. But you know, we think that's probably a good idea anyway. So we're not going to step through all the procedural changes. There's been some other great sessions which look at the deployment tools and the detail around that. We're just going to call out a few things that are sort of high-level things you need to be aware of as you're actually going through this process. So one thing that we see, you know, group policy objects, for example. You know, GPOs, you can use GPOs to make anything run like a pile of crap. And I've seen that happen. Now, I went to one of my kids' schools, and they had these, you know, pretty decent Quartu Duo Toshiba laptops. He wanted to log on to show me his portfolio and stuff. Yeah, I could have had, like, 3 cups of coffee. It was about a 15-minute login process. You know, some script or GPO badness happening in there. So, you know, GPOs are a really, really key thing. You know, anytime you're upgrading the OS, and I hope you did this when you stepped up to 7, is you don't sort of take all your old crap and try and jam it into the new operating system. You know, typically start with the baselines and then look at what you've had and then bring just the stuff you need across. And, you know, Greenfield's approach on this, much better experience. But this is a nice thing. You know, this performance toolkit really is about saying, before you go and roll this out, let's do some performance testing, understand where the hits are, if there's some stuff wrong, let's fix it before we roll it out. One thing I'll say around performance optimization as well, one of our most popular professional services is through the Premier Support Agreement. We have these WDRAPs, you know, Windows Desktop Risk Assessment piece, and also a GPO health check. It doesn't seem to matter which organization it is, which partners are involved, et cetera. The Premier guys, with their inside knowledge and the IP they have, they seem to always make a difference, shaving 30 seconds off login time, 40 seconds, whatever it might be. They can always help out. So, you know, these are great modular services, and they can really improve the experience. BitLocker enhancements. I'm hoping lots of you are using BitLocker now. And with 8.1, BitLocker goes into every single edition of the operating system. It's not just in the commercial ones. The big thing here is that if you're going to do BitLocker, It'll basically just encrypt the used piece of the disk as well, as opposed to encrypting the whole damn thing, which is what it used to have to do before, and take quite a bit of time to do that. Some important improvements with BitLocker. So the other thing is that, you know, Windows 8 devices aren't quite like your average XP device. Right. So key changes in here, just in terms of the form factor, which ports they have built into them, and you know, the way that the disks are laid out, you know, and BIOS is toast really, it's down to, you know, it's UEFI now. These things operate differently, and you have to have a different disk image, for example, with UEFI instead of disk format instead of UEFI instead of BIOS. So you just need to look at this and carefully plan around the device types. If you're using standard older machines, then you know it's pretty much as it was. But certainly when we did a POC for a government agency a little while ago around 8, you know, there was probably, out of 20 days, the first 5 days were just actually our really experienced consultant going, man, this is all a bit different. And you know, where's my, you know, how am I going to deploy it off? There's no Ethernet port in this thing, and this dongle doesn't work. How's this going to work? And you know, the build times can take longer if it's going through USB, for example. Gratuitous transition. I had to do one, sorry, guys. I didn't put a sound effect on it, though. In terms of Windows Store apps, Carl, if you want to cover that off?
Yeah, so essentially for Windows Store applications, then you can either choose two mechanisms, obviously. The first one is that you can open up the Windows Store, and if you wanted to build your applications, the best way to push those out is submit them to the Windows Store and build an authentication that way. But I guess most of the time, you're going to have a locked down set of those functionality. So you can use sideloading capabilities within Tune and SSEM to push in those applications to your image builds. You could also obviously have a corporate app store. So that self-service option for users to go and select the applications that they need that you are providing, not only for Windows tablets and Windows devices, but other platforms as well. So you'd obviously have that option with that.
Yeah, I mean, probably the ideal combination we see is, you know, to support sideloading, you need to have Windows Enterprise, so that's an important thing. Otherwise, you do need to use the store, and you can have hidden deep links, et cetera. And if you, I don't know whether you've seen Windows Intune, but we do publish out a really nice internal enterprise storefront there when you can go and consume and get sideloaded applications for Windows 8, Windows Phone, and iOS as well. It's a great way of tackling things. So Windows to go, key thing here is, you know, once again, it is a Windows Enterprise feature. You need to have that for doing Windows to go. And yeah, you can't use any old USB key. As I said earlier on, these are special keys. You need to go and look for, you know, Windows to go approved devices because they're SSDs. Yeah, as Carl was saying earlier, with Windows 8, if you do Windows to go, you do run into issues where the Windows Store, because there's a, you know, like I think it's a 10 PC limit for Windows Store in terms of which devices you can actually have the apps running on. Windows 8.1, we've got rid of that because it was just a pain in the butt and a bit silly for that type of scenario. So you can take your apps with you across whichever, how many devices you actually plug into. So, yep, as I was saying earlier, tablets are a bit different. We have got some intellectual property basically coming out of these POCs we've done recently, which can be shared. And you can ping me if you're interested in getting some access to that, just to give you a bit of a shortcut. Yeah, and you do have to think about sometimes these OS deployments, if you're doing it over a wire, can be slower than you've been used to, where you've got a direct Ethernet port. The other thing is you can do builds off USB keys, et cetera, to accelerate things on tablets. But, you know, docks, if you're doing field tablets, it's usually good to get a docking station which you can chuck it into, and that can help do the builds nice and quick. So that's probably the high-level stuff. I mean, you know, you really have done the hard yards by getting to 7. And it's just some technicalities around deployment tool versions and how you do a few things. So just a few sort of high-level call-outs around, you know, if you're going to roll out new operating system for some of these scenarios, what are some key things to look at? So, you know, devices. we like to get excited. So the key thing is that there is a huge range of devices. You're probably not sure what's going to really strike a chord with your users yet, with your executives. You know, maybe they're going to go, wow, those Surface Pros are super cool. Or they might say something like a Lenovo Helix, which is more like a traditional Ultrabook, is the go. So the thing is to actually, you know, look outside perhaps your current relationship where they might have maybe three interesting products and say, what do we think would actually fit best? You know, because all these devices are subtly different, or maybe not so subtly different, and really have a think about the options. You know, don't just show them one tablet. Show them a tablet, or maybe two tablets, a hybrid tablet, some of the Touch Ultrabooks. There's some beautiful devices. One of my favorites is the Lenovo X1 Carbon Touch. It's absolutely fantastic. And the other thing is, it's not hard to have Windows to go and give it a try out. You know, so just grab a couple of keys give those to a few people and say, hey, try this at home. Particularly good in combination, you know, if you've got your VPN client on there or you're having a go with direct access. Big thing, worker profiling. We're big believers in this. You know, when you're planning out your strategy, it shouldn't just be around the technicalities of deployment tools and a new operating system and a new version of Office and that sort of thing. To really think about what are you trying to achieve. And certainly if you're trying to get a business case over the line for doing this stuff, if you've actually identified how it's going to support what your end users are doing, your executives are doing, your field force, and how it's going to make a difference in them doing their jobs, that business case has got a whole lot better chance of flying. This is another area. We've got some fantastic IP. These sorts of templates is something that Terry's done a lot of work on, is actually the templates for helping you work through that process, either yourselves or with our professional services guys or with our partners. Great IP. Absolutely encourage you to get this. If you're going to do a Windows POC with us to try out some of this stuff, this IP, and we don't go through and analyze your whole business because that takes a bit of effort, but you know, we do get you started with this. You know, we take maybe a couple of use cases and say, let's go through this and let's check out what this is like. Some other good stuff. We've got these WorkSmart guides. If you can provide a few basic sets of pointers, this can go a long way to helping people go, oh, right, sweet, got it. So we've got all these WorkSmart guides, which are actually our internal Microsoft IT guides that we sort of change a few little details and we publish out publicly. And another thing is that we've got a fantastic Microsoft IT training program, and we can actually share this with customers. We haven't done this yet. This is a new development, but there's the ability for us to run workshops with you. So I'm looking for a volunteer. Finally, Go 8.1, it's going to give you the best level of success. All right, so that's all the many, many slides, 52 to be fair. Lots of related content. If you've missed these sessions, of course, they'll be available on demand. So, you know, go and watch these sessions, get the content there. Lots of stuff around the security internals, why it is better, deployment techniques. If you're going to go to 8.1, then you know Config Manager 2012 R2 is highly relevant. So lots of great content there. Of course, other resources. As well as the local tech ed here, absolutely encourage you to get onto Channel 9, and we actually publish all the stuff from our overseas tech eds. Like TechEd North America, I've watched way too much of that, TechEd from Europe as well. It's all up there, and they've got, you know, they run hundreds of sessions at those. So, and this is great here, but there's lots more content you can get from there as well. And that's pretty much about it in terms of us talking. We have a few little giveaways, so questions. Yeah. Windows to go is basically when you've got software assurance on your Windows desktops, you get the entitlement to Windows Enterprise.
Yep.
And Windows Enterprise is what you require for Windows to go. It's part of Windows Enterprise, and you have to keep software assurance on the fleet you're going to be using with Windows to go. So it's really tied and tightly like that. So. A key. Next question.
All
Yeah, so the first time you boot up, it basically goes through and does a discovery, looks at all the devices, and then it will basically then restart with all those devices. It works a treat. So what
is it like any device like this? Like it's dock station.
Yeah. Absolutely, and there's loads and loads of tablets which have got, so pure tablets which have got a docking base. You can just plug it in, you have keyboard, mouse, extra screens all over the place.
Yep.
Absolutely. Most of the vendors have got them.
Okay.
Yeah, there's lots of choice. Yeah, so essentially the idea is that you have a primary device at work, and if that one's licensed for Windows or software assurance, then that person, who the primary user of that, can then do Windows to go.
Yep.
Upgrade it? I think you'd have to reprovision it. Yeah, I don't think you can go into the store and pull down an upgrade, etc. Yep, just do a reprovision. Yep.